Hello everybody, James here, and it's Ask Dutch Anything, episode 38. As always, it's questionsfordutch at gmail.com for you to email for your questions. I'm just looking at your hand signals there. Semaphore. Yeah.
30.
I've got you.
38.
I've got you. So, we're going to do the very quick version of the plugs. We've got pro wrestling tees, of course. We've got books. We've got diplomas. We've got hats. You can get all the signed stuff from Dirty Dutch Mantel with two L's at gmail.com. Make your request there. We're also on Facebook, Storytime with Dutch Mantel. And also, I've got two books as well. Links are in the description, you know, all that kind of thing. But once again, the most important link, email, really, is questionsfordutch at gmail.com for your questions. And the first person to do this is, I've not written the name down, but they were asking about your very last match ever. So I thought we would do, I'm sorry for the audio listeners, I thought we could do, or you could do, a bit of retroactive commentary over your very last singles match. And don't worry, it goes about 1 minute 40.
I haven't seen this.
Do you remember? Oh, so you don't remember who it's with?
No.
Okay. It was on WWE SmackDown. Do you remember?
Rodriguez.
It was Ricardo Rodriguez. So I'm going to tee this up now, and then we'll get it on 1 second. Okay, so here it is. I'll try and forward through the introduction. So here we go.
I would be too. He's going to battle a man in a fishing vest.
Okay, there's that.
Why is it wearing Zubaz?
Those border jumpers. There they are. That,
good head of hair, if nothing else, Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yep.
Fine head of
and
hair.
Who's out there? Yep.
Ziggler, AJ Lee, and Big E in his Nation of Domination outfit.
There's Del Rio in the ring, and Rodriguez. What was his first name?
Ricardo.
Ricardo. And see, I'm telling everybody to get up. You know, I didn't know this was my last match, but leave it to you. You pulled it up. There is We the People. And that, look at that little urchin there. And the Jack's giving me the last minute instructions, going in the ring. I'm only older than this guy, maybe 40 years. So
I was going to say, yeah, haven't you had like 48,000 matches more than Jack Swagger, but he's giving you instructions.
Oh, yeah. And Jack is trying to get me ready to go. And I'm telling that Rodriguez to get out because I don't trust him for some reason.
Yeah.
Now, that Rodriguez feller, I think he was an American, but no.
Not but for I don't know where. This.
No. He was a Mexicano. So, and they ring the bell. And look at that crowd I drew. Yeah, what are you doing there, buddy? Yeah, get back, you know. See, and then slapped him. See there, no pride at all. Well, see, and he went for my mustache. Look at there. Is that, he kicked me in my bad knee. Look, and he stomped
me. I'm just mounting you.
What is this? What is he trying to do? And it's a good thing I'm trying to get up. Oh,
I take it you're the one who put this kind of match together.
Well, I don't know if you'd call this a match, to tell you the truth.
There's punches. The riding.
Ah, there you go. Now I'm just getting sneaking. Now see how much sneaking he does now.
Hey, Vince loved that, didn't he?
Oh, he loved it. So I'll get back in the ring after I've taunted Mr. Rodriguez outside.
Got to tell you, the Kevin Dunn era of just zooming in and out with every punch. Oh, give me epilepsy.
Well, he didn't trust my punches anyway. Well,
apparently not.
But after I almost knocked, what's that guy's name I'm wrestling? Oop! Oh, he nailed me. A shot. Look at there. Oh, not and the gut. Look at there.
And his trousers are falling down slightly as well.
Isn't this elder abuse here? See what he's. He's trying to. Oh yeah. Thank you, Jack. There we go.
So for the audio listeners out there, Jack Swagger interfered after 1 minute 40 something, and then Alberto Del Rio is interfering, and then we're not actually going to... Oh, I want to see what's going to happen here.
He caught me. Excuse me, I'll slide out of here.
This is quite quite light.
Thank you. Thank you, Jack. Thank you. But you saw who we left laying. So we should have left that Del Rio. Vince loved that too. He said, always roll the R. Alberto Del Rio. So
you know that actually wasn't your last match.
I'm gonna tell a little story about this.
Okay.
I wasn't supposed to have this match.
Okay.
I didn't know till later on that I wasn't supposed to be touched in any of these matches. I was not supposed to be put in any matches at all. And but that was from medical, and I didn't know this.
Really?
And then they end up putting me in the match. And if I'd have gotten hurt, I could have sued them. You didn't know that, did you?
I didn't know that.
Because I was so professional, I didn't sue them. It's part of the job, so it was better than what I was doing. But if I'd have gotten hurt, yeah, that would have come to my attention, and I may have made a little bit of a settlement. I didn't sign an NDA, see?
When did you have your medical then? Because I thought
you had to have medical
before you went on TV at all. But
You do.
Okay.
No, before you get signed, you have to have a medical. So I went to Pittsburgh, spent a whole day in Pittsburgh running around. He's giving me all these tests and all this and all that. And so I got through that, which means I was in pretty good shape. But it came with I'm not supposed to do anything physical. Not supposed to be in a match, but that part they left out to later on when I actually did get hurt. Because then they was telling me that I forgot what happened is. Oh, I know. I forgot where I was in California somewhere. And I had rode to Vegas. We rode to Vegas from LA. And I got out of the car at the hotel that I was staying at. And the driver he wasn't watching what he was doing. And I walked in front of the car and he nudged me and knocked me down. Then he got out. No, oh, I'm sorry.
Was it Alberto Del Rio driving you? No, this was another
guy that I got. He had just been a taxi. He had come up. And I was getting out of my car, and I got my bag walking in front, and he's letting it ease forward a little bit and not watch it. And he touched me and knocked me down. And he said, oh, I'll give you $20. I said, get the hell out of here. You're gonna kill me, you stupid bastard. So that would have been another lawsuit. I could have had two lawsuits in the space of 2 years, once against a taxi driver and one against the WWE.
So how injured did you get?
How much money did I get?
No, how injured did you get with this taxi thing? No, I don't know the story.
I didn't get injured.
Oh, okay.
But they didn't know that. Because I was already hurt anyway from all my years banging around in the ring. Oh, yeah, here's another one. A Big Show clubbed me one time. I had to take a bump. And how I found out about this is Mark Carano, who was the head of talent relations at that time, he was telling me, he said, all right, whatever finish you guys do, they can't touch you. I went, what do you mean they can't touch me? No, you're not supposed to be touched. What? First time I'd even heard about it. And I'd already been there like a year. I said, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah, don't ever let anybody touch you. And if he said, if they have a problem with that, tell them come see me. So all that time, that year and a half, these guys were pounding on me, and I didn't even know about it. Because, you know, you go to the ring, the kid, babyface wants to punch you. I don't care as long as you don't knock my head off. But he wasn't even supposed to do that. So they was in violation of a lot of agreements that we had signed. I didn't even know about it.
You had, if you were interested, all your matches with WWE. There were six of them.
Yep.
All in April 2013. So we went from the 1st to the 30th. Alberto Del Rio defeats Zeb Coulter by DQ in 45 seconds, 2-1 handicap. That's pretty much it. There's Biggie Langston, Dolph Ziggler, and Jack Swagger. Anyway, the match that we saw ended up being made into a six-man with Alberto and... a tag match. Alberto and Ricardo versus Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter that then ended in 1 minute 16. But we'll save that for another time, I think. But yeah.
What happened in the tag match? I'm sure I got bait.
No contest. So there you go, last ever match. Contest, yeah.
So I didn't lose it?
No.
Oh, that was good. So my one loss record is better than I thought. I don't think I've ever won a match in WWE.
I'm trying to look. Oh, you're including the 95, 96 run as well. Shall I actually see? I can find out for you.
So is it still zero?
What's still zero?
My one loss record.
You have to give me a minute to look. I'm just looking. Defeats.
Okay, Zeb.
So in the WWE 2013 thing, yes, you are unwon. But if I go on WWE... Sorry, you'll have to bear with me, everybody. Oh, only 21 matches it's got here. Loss. You lost to the Bushwhackers quite a lot, apparently. Aldo Montoya and Jake Roberts. Jesse James beat you. Alberto Del Rio. Oh, there you go. Yes, you have never won a match in WWF.
WWF.
Or WWE.
Or WWE. Hey, that's some sort of a record, I would think.
Yes, and you had one no contest. So according to all matches that we can find at the moment on Cage Match, you are 0 and 20 and 1 because one was a draw.
Now, what was the draw? You don't know?
No contest at the end.
Okay.
So it doesn't even count. It's not even a draw. Anyway. Right, we shall move on to the first of the fan questions. Questions for Dutch at gmail.com. Dylan from the UK says, hello, James and Dutch. I listen to every episode. Why do you think wrestlers don't either save a lot of their money or invest it all too well? So why are wrestlers not saving their money for the most part, or at least back in the old days?
Well, back in the old days, only the top guys really made money. I mean, we made a decent salary. We could live and own new cars and all that, but cut that off for about 3 months. Cut that off for 6 months or more, and you'll see that if you had saved money, you'd have to spend it to continue to live. So, and that was probably what happened. And later on, even though you make good money, you know, taxes eat you up. They will take, I mean, you got all these write-offs, but according to how much money you made. But still, if you say you made 100 grand, and they won't say 30 of that for taxes, then the 70s is what it takes you to live. So that's one reason. It's not whether you've invested well or not. It's whether you're making money to last long enough. Make sense?
Yeah. Did you invest in anything in particular over your career?
Yeah, food and cars and gasoline. Rent, groceries, electricity, medical care. Yeah, that's what I invested in.
What about in the WWE run? Because I imagine you're getting paid, you know, pretty darn well, really, for a manager, I'm sure. But, I mean, did you put that money into anything? Or
no, I did save it, but I didn't put it into anything because there's a lot of reasons I'd rather not go into right now, but... I'm an old timer, so I'd actually saved it in cash money. And by that time, guess what I owed?
Well,
I owed the IRS. So the money I put back just was to repay the IRS. But they did teach me a few lessons about tax paying. They'll give you 3 years to pay it. If you don't pay it, you know, they'll come after you and they'll put a lien on you or whatever you got. But then if they don't collect it in 3 years, you know what they do?
Put you in prison?
No, they write it off.
Oh.
If they don't. So I owe this, This is not the first time I've owed money to the IRS. So the first time they wrote it off because they didn't collect it, or they were going to, oh, I forgot, but I moved. And then when I moved, it went to a different district. And then they started working on it. But before we knew it, the time was up to collect on that amount. So they wrote that off too. They wrote off about, I guess, about 20 grand.
Not bad saving. Not bad saving.
Well.
Okay, so if why don't we say someone like, let's say famously Jake Roberts. He must have been making hundreds of thousands in the 80s for quite a few years.
Maybe.
Or there are so many examples of wrestlers, you know, on top in a big promotion in the 80s, 90s, even 2000s, I'm sure. And then they just don't save anything. It does the wrestling business just attract a type of person who is not savvy with their money for the most part? Or
well, the guys that really had the money weren't your top guys, really. It was your underneath guys who were penny pinchers. One guy told me one time, you watch your pennies, the dimes take care of themselves. And that was his, like Randy Savage. I bet Randy Savage still has his first $10 that he made. Well, not now, but, you know, he was notoriously cheap. And some more cheap people were Cactus Jack. He was notoriously cheap. Owen Hart. Owen Hart would go to a town and he would have his fans there. And he would call ahead and say, hey, I'm coming in. We're going to do a 3-day run around, say, Columbus, Ohio. They would come to the airport, pick him up, take him to their house or wherever they lived. He could stay with them. They would feed him. They would take him to the towns every night. And then finally end up taking him back to the airport and he was leaving. He would actually leave the town with more money than what he came there with because they take care of everything. Hmm. And he was notorious for that.
Rip Rogers.
Rip Rogers is another one. And who, Sheik?
No, not the Sheik. Adnan Al-Kasi. I've heard that he was incredibly cheap.
Oh, yeah. These guys here, they're unbelievably cheap. If they tip, they will actually, Savage would actually figure out the amount of money he owed on a tip. And that's what he'd leave. Sometimes they would leave it. They were embarrassing, to tell you the truth. If you were somebody, they'd count out change on the table. Or I said, come on, man. We're supposed to be making big money and you counting out nickels and dimes and stuff. Well, you know, I saved my money. And Savage did. He because he learned that from Angelo, his dad. And Lanny was the same way. Now, they're all dead now, right?
Yes. Yes, they are.
I think Lanny, what, died 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
He was in Ecuador.
He was in New York briefly. I think he was taken in a show and yeah, he just dropped.
Yep. So. But I think he was living in Ecuador.
He was, yeah.
Because it was notoriously cheap to live there.
Mm-hmm.
So if he took his money down there, he would be like a millionaire in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he had like 5 or 6 housekeepers. And I think that's how he died.
Well, just he was overcleaning.
No, I think he was having relations with about 3 or 4 of them. Yeah. So, and it probably wore him out.
Why not? And then sucking himself off the rest of the time probably as well.
Stop it. Stop it. You had to bring that up, didn't you?
Well, he brought it up first, is all I'm saying.
He did bring it up.
Yeah.
He brought it up to me one time and wanted to demonstrate it. And I said, no, I don't think we need a visual demonstration. I believe you. I believe you. So.
We will move on. Ron Kirkman. So I don't know if you can answer this, really. It's a hypothetical. Hi, James and Dutch. It's 1975 and you are a new NWA owner and attend your first NWA convention meeting. What is the first question or questions you would ask from a round table of legends comprised of Sam Mushnick, Eddie Graham, Jim Barnett, Vern Gagne, Vince McMahon Sr., Paul Bosch, Roy Scheid, Don Owen, Fritz Von Erich, etc.?
I think my first question is, anybody want to buy my territory? That's the first thing I would say. And I'd say, if nobody wanted to buy it, I said, okay, you talked me into it. Okay, it's cut in half. Anybody want to buy it at a high price? No, I would just, I wouldn't ask them anything. I'd say, how does this thing operate? How does it run? Who's in charge? What if somebody invades me, or can I go somewhere else, or just learn the mode of operation and see how it works? Where are you going?
I'm not going anywhere. My light was too white, so I've just warmed it up a bit.
All right.
There we go. I'll move on. Sean from Plymouth.
Okay. Who was all in this thing? Who are the members?
We had Eddie Graham, Jim Barnett, Vern Gagne, Vince McMahon Sr., Paul Bosch, Roy Scheider, Don Owen, Fritz von Erich. I know you never met Don Owen. I don't think you ever met Roy Scheider, did you?
No, never met them.
Did you ever meet Vern Gagne?
I met Vern. I met him.
Where?
And the only in Memphis when Hardy Race beat me in about 2 minutes.
Oh, right. So the pro wrestling USA.
Doing that
thing,
damn mass taping and all. And I never will forget that. I said, do you think maybe I ought to lose here in 2 minutes? I said, I don't mind losing, but, you know, in 2 minutes? Oh, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And I said, don't worry about it. Well, if I wasn't worried about it, why'd I even bring it up to you? I was talking to Jerry Jarrett. Oh, no, these guys will see you and they want to use you up there. And I went, yeah, right, whatever. Let's go get it done. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was easier just to go and do it than to argue about it.
And I'm just looking at Pro Wrestling USA since you've got your thing. Yeah, Story Funk Jr. beat you on that same taping as well. Mm-hmm. We established that on the...
Yeah, we did. I got beat twice that night. Oh. But by former world champions. Mm. That makes a big difference.
In 2 minutes as well makes a big difference. Anyway, we'll move on.
I think I went longer with Dory.
It doesn't give the time on this one, which is a bit disappointing.
On Harley it does, right?
Yeah, 2:06.
Yep.
Next question, Sean from Plymouth. Question for Dutch is, what were the boys' backstage thoughts on the great Carly? Was he liked backstage and was he considered a wrestler?
No, he wasn't considered a wrestler. He was a gimmick. He was like the fat lady at the zoo. You know what I mean? he was just such a freak of nature, huge. He couldn't hardly walk. He was massive. He was just huge. And it's not like anybody disliked him or anything. He was there and everybody knew you'd just have to look at him. And he was there because of his size and because he was Indian. Because, you know, we've talked about India before with 1.4 billion people.
Well, you'd want to put 1.3.
Are you sure?
It's not four. Yeah, 1.3 is about right.
I think it went to four.
4 billion? No.
1.4 billion.
No. Oh, you said 4 billion, not 1.4.
Not 4 billion, 1.3.
Yeah, around 1. That. Yeah.
Okay, a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's why he was there, his size and his nationality.
Could you ever understand what the heck he was saying?
I've said hello to him, but I never sat down for a cup of coffee with him and talked to him. Mm. He could speak English, but, you know, he spoke Punjabi, I think. They called it Punjabi or Hindu. I think he spoke one of those languages. Not that it mattered, because I didn't understand either one of it. A Punjabi, you ever heard about Punjabis in India?
Yeah.
They're like all over the world. A guy told me one time, he said, in any country in the world, there's a Punjabi there doing something. They were the workers. You know, they were the brick masons and they were the truck drivers and they were there and they were the trash collectors and they did working jobs, but they would work from what they call can to can't. And he said they would work their butts off. So when they would go somewhere and they needed help, they would say, hey, go see these guys I'll tell this guy to come see you. And, you know, you've fulfilled your quota. And they worked, they wouldn't get drunk. They wouldn't miss work. They were actually pretty loyal people.
Just to finish off the Great Khali thought, what's your favorite Great Khali match or dance?
We had a match with him one time. I did an interview in front of him. I think I said, okay, listen, I know you don't speak English fluently. So, and I use sign language and I go, you and me. I forgot what I said, but I was making fun of him. And then we started the match. So, or Jack started the match. I don't even know. We were in Huntsville, Alabama. I know that. And we had the match, but we had this match on a, we would do SmackDown on a Tuesday. We'd do Raw on Monday, SmackDown on Tuesday. And then we would do some of those syndication shows that would play in odd places, but they made a lot of money off of it. So they would
I've
just.
got it here. It's WWE main events, Great Khali versus Jack Swagger, August 21st, 2013.
Yep, that's it.
There you go.
Huntsville, Alabama, right?
It doesn't say the town, but why don't we get your promo? One sec. Okay. We'll just watch the interview. Here we go.
Khali,
there's Charles Robinson
as
well.
This moment to speak. I've got something I'm curious about, and I want you to answer me. Why is it that every time I call a service hotline about one of my electronic devices, I always get a voice on the other end who claims his name is Bob, but he sounds so much like you and makes about as much sense? Why is that? You know why that is? Hey, don't think too hard. Hey, let me give you the answer. It's what I think. I think that it's the multinational companies in America have outsourced jobs to other countries like yours because they found out that it's cheaper to do business in your country than to do business in this country and hire real Americans.
Who's
That's
the blonde?
Why.
Is it Natalia?
Because we are the king of outsourcing.
The blonde woman.
And if I was the king of the outsourcing
Natalia, I think.
In this country, you know what I'd export? I would export you.
That's
now, hey,
good.
Don't take that the wrong way. But Connie, let me ask you something. How long have you been in this country? 4 years, 5 years? How much have you learned about this country? I'm going to ask you a question just to prove a point.
Man, you actually got a Khali chant going.
Hang on. Now listen, I'm going to ask you a question. Hey, look at me. Look at me, you know. I'm going to ask you a question to find out how much you know about our country. And I'm going to speak a little slower and a little louder so there's no misunderstanding. Okay, here's a question. When was the War of 1812 fought? When? Don't tell him. Don't tell him.
Khali, deliver that.
There we go. That'll do. We've just got to make sure. Did Jack win?
Jack!
No, he didn't.
I don't think so.
No, there you go.
When was the War of 1812 fought? When did they sign the Declaration of Independence? I could have got Billy.
Oh.
That was that. That's what they wrote for me. So.
Yeah, it's a good one, though. I like it. We will move on. Eric says, my question is, what are the must-see feuds and rivalries from your career that a new fan needs to look up and see? Like a best of Dutch compilation. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
Well, most of my stuff, it was on videotape, which has more or less it's more or less gone. But I had some great matches with Randy Savage right before I went to Puerto Rico the first time. And I wish I still had them on video because they were some great matches. Also had a great run with Lawler in Memphis. And most of that is gone too, by the way. What I really wish I had was back in Georgia when I started. I learned with this guy, Ted Oates, and he's passed away now, but man, we really had some what they call bangers. But we would go 15-minute, what they call Broadway, which like a time limit draw. And guys would keep, we'd get back in the dressing room and guys would tell us, slow down, because we were, there was no, we didn't know a rest hold. We didn't know it. So we would just go and we'd go 15 minutes straight without really a break. Guys can take a break in a match, but they take a headlock and, you know, take the guy over, and then that gives them time to breathe a little bit. But, and then a lot of my stuff in Puerto Rico, it's gone too. So unless it's on, unless it's been transcribed to CD, you know, the tapes, every time you retape off of it, part of it's gone. Mm-hmm. Part of it's gone.
It degrades over time. Yeah.
And, but, your CDs won't.
Digital transfer and
everything. Digital will not. So I didn't learn that for a while, but I know it now. I wish I had it.
What was your last feud as far as wrestling goes that you'd say, do you know what? Watch this feud. Because I know you wrestle, like, we're talking late 80s, Jeff Jarrett, you wrestled Jerry Lawler quite a lot, but when you were still full time, what was your like final great in ring feud, would you say?
Well, it would be probably in Puerto Rico against a guy called Ray Gonzalez. A lot of people in Puerto Rico still remember that. But I was a heel then, and it was easy to get heat in Puerto Rico. I just go out and attack the people and tell them if they didn't understand the need to take some English lessons and all. People hated me down there. Hell, I hated myself after I damn listened to some of my interviews. No wonder I couldn't walk down the street, because, you know, I didn't insult my opponent that much as I insulted the people. So I made it personal, and part of that insulting them, part of it's true, you know, as like Puerto Rico, they can't speak English, they can't do this, they can't do that, and I would call them drunks and drug addicts. I would call them all these things, and the only way they had to get back at me is coming and booing me at the stadiums. So a lot of times we would go do these big stadium shows. I would run to the ring to get in, because they would try to hit me with bottles and rocks and everything else. And when the match was over, I didn't take my time getting back in that dugout either, because I ran back in there and watching the crowd, because I would call it the Puerto Rican air parade. Boy, here the stuff would come. Mm. I had a guy, he was working for me, and his name was Exotico. He played like a gay character, which you could used to be able to do. You can't do it now.
Unless you're gay.
Well, no, you still can't do it. Mm. Well, you could. What's the guy's called in Mexico? He's what's his name?
Oh, you love him, Cassandro.
Oh, Cassandro. He was great. He really was. But, he used to come when he was a kid. He told me, he said, he taught like this. He said, Dutch, I don't know how to tell you this, but when I was a kid, I would come to the matches and I would sell rocks to the fans to throw at you. I sold them for a dime a piece. I said, well, you little bastard. But yeah, they were very, very physical there. They wanted to hit me in the top of the head.
There are matches with you versus Randy Savage, but I think they're later in Memphis. There is Ray Gonzalez versus Dutch Mantel matches available right now. There is Jerry Lawler as well. So plenty for you to get going with. We will move on. Daryl Kirby says, hello, Dutch and James. Early in Mark Calloway's career, he worked under the hood as Texas Red for WCCW. Excuse me. Was it Dutch that was driving down the road one night listening to an old Marty Robbins tape, and the song Big Iron came on and came up with the name? Texas Red was a bad guy character in the song. I would imagine a lot of wrestlers' names and programs and angles came from driving from town to town late at night and talking about movies and songs. Do you know of any other wrestlers' names or angles that came from late night car rides? Thank you.
Well, when I put on a mask and I became another character, I lost at Loser Leave Town to Jerry Lawler, I think. Who didn't know I lost it to Undertaker? I lost it to Undertaker. So I came back under the mask and I called myself Texas Dirt from Dirt, Texas. And that's how I come back. And the angle was that if I was ever, the mask ever come off, and it was revealed that it was me, of course, hard to hide this body and all this hair. But if people found out that it was me, I was banned in Memphis forever to the end of time. So that's how I got the name Texas Dirt from Dirt, Texas. And people was actually looking up Dirt, Texas on the map.
And you came. So
they
up with
would
that
ask. They would ask where it was. I said, "Well, it's about three turns from the south of nowhere, and so you can find that in Texas and right on the Mexican border." So.
And you came up with that in a car.
Probably.
Okay, I think you might have misunderstood the question slightly.
No, the other people. I understood that.
Yeah. No, it wasn't Texas too. It was Texas Red.
No, I understand Texas. Oh, okay. But I didn't have anything to do with that.
Okay, then. Any characters or storylines or anything that you specifically came up with copying a film or a song or something that you heard in the car, maybe?
No, not really. I mean, you know, on the last show we did last Friday, we booked AEW for about 2 or 3 months just at the end of the show. And that's how things come up. You're talking to somebody. He's got an idea, or you got an idea, or somebody else has an idea. And if you can use it, you take it and you piece it together and you like segment it and see if you can make it workable. Then you, if you're not the booker, then you go to the booker with it and see if he wants to use it.
Who was the first time that you ever saw, because, you know, it's been done so many times, the Texas Dirt from Dirt, Texas, but, you know, versions of it, you know, Midnight mm-hmm. Rider or the Yellow Dog or Staggerly or whatever it is. Who was the first person to do it, do you know? Or the first time you saw that and then cribbed off it?
Handsome Jimmy, I think. What was his name?
Oh, good
and
question.
What was Dusty?
He was Midnight Rider.
Midnight Rider. He did it. Coco Beware did it. It's been done a lot. It's been
Charlie
done a lot
Brown.
Of times.
Charlie Brown from Out of Town was Jimmy yep. Valiant.
And it's been done a lot of times. But the thing is, you can bring those back after 3 or 4 years if you don't overuse it. I guarantee you could go to AEW, could do it now. And most of those fans have never seen it. And you probably get it to work.
Could have brought Jack Perry in earlier under a mask. But with the beard
sticking out. What name? You have to do a name that's kind of indicative of who he is.
Texas Dirt's been used. Midnight Rider's been used. Charlie, I don't know. What would you choose? Luke Perry? 90210, Beverly Hills?
I don't know. That'd be a good question.
Oh, the Beverly Hills Bruiser. How about that?
That would be good. Beverly Hills Bruiser. That'd be good.
We'll move on. Andrew Warrilow from Queensland, Australia says, "Hey gents, has Dutch ever seen the video about him on the YouTube channel Wrestle Me? Would love to hear his thoughts." And I remember you telling me you saw this ages ago, I think.
No, years ago.
Yeah.
But see, it started off, I thought it was going to be just a knock job. And they started off by kind of continuing that trend. But toward the end, changed their tune, and all of a sudden I knew exactly what I was doing, and I was a genius, and I was one of the smartest men in wrestling. I liked the way it ended. I didn't like it much care for the way it started, but yeah, it was. See, like I did, I didn't go against the grain. Sometimes you got to show you can do the job, and before they're gonna give you the job. So that's what I did.
For some reason, I've got a memory that we've talked about this before, but
we did talk about it before.
Oh, have we? What was the guy called who you wrestled? I forget. World's Strongest Man at the time. Yeah, who did you wrestle in that video?
What was his name? Doug something, not Doug, not Furnace.
Furnace and LaFon. So he's one of the, yeah, he beat Doug Furness.
Yep. I forgot what happened now. Doug should have been a bigger star than what he was. You know what his drawback was?
Personality.
Yeah, he couldn't talk. He had no personality. He's rude. He was a strong guy. He squatted 900 pounds. Anybody that can squat 900 pounds, I don't have nothing to do with them. It's like this. You keep your shit over there, and I keep my shit over here. And so.
So if you've got do you need to cut a promo on the WrestleMe people, or did it just end well enough that you're fine with them?
No, it was okay. It was fine. It was good. It was actually a pretty good video, to tell you the truth.
You see, I'd kind of like to do that kind of thing. The only problem is that they show footage that is copyrighted and therefore you can't make money off it. So what's the point?
What do they show that's copyrighted? Everything?
Yeah, because they had all the footage of you and, you know, WCW footage and stuff like that. So they can't actually monetize.
Who owns WCW now?
Oh, WWE, yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. How do they know it's copyrighted? They have something that will show up in the feed?
Oh, if you try and upload something, then your YouTube channel will let you know that there has been a copyright match, content ID match. And then even if it's 1 second of, let's say, WWE that it spots in your video, then all the money you make for that video will then go to WWE.
What?
Yeah. Even for a second in a 10-hour video, if 1 second of it, Content ID decides that WWE or whoever it is owns that footage, then they will have the ability and they will take that as well. They will take all the advertising revenue you make off your video and they will keep it for themselves. They have three options: do nothing, take the revenue, or have your video removed. And WWE takes the revenue.
Hmm. Well,
there you go.
That's the way they got it. Yep. So
it's theirs. So there you go. Right, next one. Hi. Oh, God, yes. I put his name. Hi, James and Dutch. Travis from Burlington, North Carolina here. Love the show and have introduced many of my friends and peers to the entertainment you provide. Thank you very much. I grew up in East Tennessee and from the ages of 13 to 16, I fell in love with Smoky Mountain Wrestling. To me, it is so very underrated. My question is twofold. Would Dutch have enjoyed booking this territory? And in fact, why don't we just keep that? Would you have enjoyed booking the territory, or were you ever offered to book the territory?
No, I never offered. That was Cornette's job. Cornette was the booker. Let him do it. But I would love to book Smoky Mountain.
Why? Why that territory? Easy? Well,
because it wasn't easy. It was just first of all, you got to know the patients you're working with. I think I understood that area. I understood the fans like I did in Memphis and Alabama and Florida and, you know, the Southern people. And I kind of understood that. And you just tell simple stories. Sometimes you can be stupid with it, but hit a get over. And I think I could have done some big business with Smoky Mountain. Big business.
Oh, geez, my wife's ringing me. And number two is there anything Dutch could have done differently to extend the life of this small promotion past 1995? Seems the boom period for wrestling was right around the corner. Had Cornette been able to hold on? Thank you for your time.
Well, I don't know if I could. It got to. I don't know what happened in Smoky Mountain. It wasn't the talent. I think what happened, Jimmy got burnt out on it. You know, you can book a play. What year did he go out of business?
End of 95. In fact, your pal, Justin Hawk Bradshaw, was actually going to join Smoky Mountain a couple of weeks after it shut down. He was promised December or something. And then they shut down in like November, as an example, of 95.
And what year did it start? 92?
Maybe the end of 91, but around that time.
Yeah, well, I think he got burnt out on it. He had his buddies there, the Rock and Roll Express. But after a while in a small territory, if you keep the talent too long, they get old. And it's like anything else. I think some of the talent may have got aged a little bit. You know, that's where Jericho and what was his partner called before?
Lance Storm.
Lance Storm. That's where they started. I think I still have their initial interview when I was at the desk at Smoky Mountain. It was me and Bob Caudle and Jericho and Lance Storm. I think that was their first interview in Smoky Mountain. So, and I don't know, I've heard some of the stories that he's told about Smoky Mountain not making any money or working some of those independents before he got to Smoky Mountain. I think Smoky Mountain took care of him pretty well, but I think what happened to Smoky Mountain, I think that I think Cornette was trying to book it all himself. He didn't relegate any of the responsibility to anybody else. He did it all. And I think he was doing too much. Toward the end, he was actually working double with WWF and Smoky Mountain at the same time. Because I left, I think I left in, when did I leave?
Probably mid-94, maybe, I think you left.
I know when I left. At the end of 94.
End of 94.
End of 93, because I was 94 as in WWF.
No, 95. You were in WWF. Okay.
94, I was in Puerto Rico. Yes?
Yes. Okay, I've got something for you here about Jim Cornette. He says that he places at least some blame. Other people have blamed it on creative rot and, you know, not enough talent and stuff.
On me?
Partially, but elsewhere, he has blamed Wade Keller of the Pro Wrestling Torch.
And he blamed Wade Keller for the demise?
Yes, because...
Smoky Mountain? How?
Because, apparently, now I'm going to muddle up the story here. I heard it quite a long time ago, but I believe he wanted to get into the Chattanooga area TV, and then when the TV was there, he could start running shows there, and that would have paid enough to keep the promotion afloat. But he blames Wade Keller for writing a series of newsletter stories that Smoky Mountain was on the downfall, it was about to close up shop, even, you know, when it was quite a while away from doing that. And apparently someone at the station, TV station at Chattanooga, read the Pro Wrestling Torch and decided not to invest in the TV show of Smoky Mountain Wrestling because he thought, because of Wade Keller's writing, thought that Smoky Mountain was about to go out of business and not to waste his time.
Mm-hmm. So you want to know, is there any merit in that story?
Do you know?
Well, they can write whatever they want to write. According to, I think whoever was reading that took that as the true facts. And I think Smoky Mountain would have done good, would have done great in Chattanooga, because Chattanooga's really a good wrestling town, great wrestling town. But you had all those towns around Chattanooga. So see, Cornette, you know, when you run a town, an area, say like you run Chattanooga, you just don't consider running Chattanooga. You're considering running 60 to 70 miles, you know, the TV coverage area. That's what you can pick up another extra 15 towns, you know, to fill some dates. And I think they would have done well. Now, Wade Keller wrote that. And I don't know why he would write all this stuff about Smoky Mountain. It wasn't like it was a North Carolina or South Carolina. It wasn't mid-Atlantic, and it wasn't Texas, and it wasn't Florida. So he was going to write about, he's going to write about Smoky Mountain going out of business. That was what Cornette's problem was, I think, is because all the towns around Knoxville was his biggest town. Now, if he went to Chattanooga, he would have added a town bigger than Knoxville. And now if they could put Knoxville and Chattanooga together, you know, under the same company, that would have really helped Smoky Mountain. But and you said somebody at the station read Wade Keller
apparently
and took it as the truth. Yeah. Well, again, you can blame Wade Keller. Nobody, there's no way to know, but if he stopped that, And I want to know who the guy was at Reddit. He had to be like one pretty up, pretty high up in the company.
Enough so to make decisions, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, to throw his weight around a little bit like that.
Or at least have someone's ear that he could talk to pass that information on, true or not. Right. Next question. Butter says, I was wondering if Dutch could tell us about teaming up with Frankenstein, aka Dr. Frank, in Memphis. It was a four-way tag with Schultz and that Uncle Elmer guy. Thanks.
I'd rather not revisit that. That was probably... Okay, I just want you to imagine. You're going with this guy called Dr. Frank with a mask on. And it was Frank Morrell. He was... He was a referee other than that. But he used to wrestle, you know, full-time. But no, it was a match I don't even remember. And there's a reason for that, because it was pretty bad. It was a bad match. And the people sat there like this. So I think Dr. Frank, he came out of a box because you know, Cornette, he used the box because, you know, what's the old saying? If you wanted something to get over or something, just bring it out of a box or something. And that's where Dr. Frank came from. Yeah, it wasn't a good match at all. And I don't even know the story, and I don't want to recall it really.
I'm just looking at Dr. Frank now. I've actually got an image of Dr. Frank. So it's on memphiswrestling.fandom.com, Chris, to put a photo in. Do you remember, right, so this has got to be a Jerry Lawler thing, because as far as I can tell, so Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler like tag team the booking, want to do 6 months, yeah, and then get burnt out, and then Jerry Lawler would do it for the rest, and then, what was it, Cleveland Browns or something, baseball season had happened.
Oh, no, football.
Excuse me.
Lawler booked the summer after Christmas. Hmm. But then when football season come up, got to go. Can't interfere with my Cleveland Browns football. So, and he would take off. Now, also, in the fall of the year, guess what happens in the start of the fall of the year? Start of the fall, what happens?
Kids go back to school.
Kids go back to school, and that hurts your attendance because they got to pay for the kids' books and this, that, and the other. Plus, the kids got to go to school the next day. So that will hurt your attendance. But some of those years, we went through school openings like it wasn't even there. The territory was so hot, and it was, you know, people just wanted to see wrestling. It was and I think the 80s, the start of the 80s, all around for wrestling was very good. So, and Lawler, when he took off the fall, you know, he would just work Memphis and TV, as it. And then he'd say, don't put me on any. He'd tell Jerry Jarrett would be the booker, don't put me in any angles because, you know, Cleveland's going here. Cleveland's going to be there, and I'm going over here. So, but we still did well. So they would swap it off.
Now, I think of, because I didn't realize it was this early 1977, so this probably wasn't a Jerry Lawler thing. Nick Goulas and Jerry Jarrett, it actually split between... he would appear for Nick Goulas and Jerry Jarrett as Dr. Frank in 77 and 78. Do you remember, because the reason I brought this up, apparently incorrectly, but I'll ask it anyway, is Lawler, he would sometimes make up some of these silliest characters, like monsters from films and stuff like that, to do like a 2 or 3 week program with. Do you remember some of those characters that he came up with that were particularly memorable?
What was the... they made a movie of this guy, and he was a character, but he had long fangs here. He wore a hat. Freddy
Krueger, yeah.
He had Freddy Krueger. I remember that. And Freddy was pretty good. That was Tommy. Yeah, it was Elm Street movies or whatever. But he was, Tommy Gilbert was the Freddy character, and he's actually pretty good. So, and I forgot what else he would do some. I forgot. He would do some chicken stuff, Chicken Little or Chicken this or that. But that was the beauty of Memphis TV. Because, and he would do it. When you ask him why he would do that, can you hear my dog barking?
Yeah, but carry on. Don't worry.
Okay. I'm being attacked by the mailman. So my dog's going to make sure my vicious little puppy, he makes sure nobody's going to break in here and murder me. But yeah, he would do that for the kids, and he would do that. He'd keep them around a month, then they'd be gone. And he did that over and over and over and over.
Probably only ask one more. So, okay, I've got five questions here. So I'm going to tell you which one you can pick, which one. The town you tried to kill in Puerto Rico but ended up going up, or the Dutch versus Lawler mustache versus title. Howard Finkel. In fact, Howard Finkel, Chick Donovan, and I can't tell that one. So which of those four would you like to answer? In fact, you know what? I wouldn't mind hearing you talk about Howard Finkel, really, if you would. Or is there something else you prefer?
Well, I'm probably more proficient in that town in Puerto Rico.
Okay, then. Well, let's ask that then.
That's where I got my booking. Actually, I got an education just in that town.
Well, I'll ask that one then.
We'd go to the town on Sundays. It didn't draw crap. It'd draw about 100 people. We go back in as every Sunday because it was easy to book it. The town was cheap. I would draw more than 100, maybe 150 people. But, and I was booking it. Nothing but get the town up. I'd do all these kind of crazy angles and stuff. Nothing. So finally I said, damn it, I'm tired of going to this town every Sunday. I'm going to kill this town. You know, name that tune. Somebody said, okay, name that tune. I started beating every heel on the card. Every heel. And at the end, I would just leave like a big wild fight just to say I done something. Then we come back the next week, you know. So the first time I did it, I came back the next week after I beat every heel on the car. Hell, the town was up about 50 people. I went, what are these people, slow or what? I said, I'm trying to kill it, not make it go up. I did the same thing that show too, beat all the heels and then worked a little angle at the end. Come back the next week, it's up another 50 people. I went, well, goddamn. I don't understand this. I'm beating all my heels, but the town is going up. Even Carlos told me one time, he said, what are you doing in that town? It's coming up. I went, wait a minute. It's going to different. Instead of, I wanted it to go down so they just lose money. But no, it kept coming up. So then I actually learned that let the people be happy. And you give them what they pay for. They leave it in a good mood, and it comes up. So then I started taking it. And booking almost all the towns in Puerto Rico the same way. It was babyface night almost every time out. People would leave, and I just get a little heater in that last match. We're done. And it took off. And I booked that way since that time. Because when you do your angles, I learned, don't do your angles in the house shows. Do your angles on TV. So that's where everybody sees it at one time. So I learned that, and it's served me, and it's worked so far.
So you said with the main events, and you know, you do a little bit of heat there. So would you actually have the bad guy, the heel, win the main events?
No, I'd have him lose that too. Then beat the crap out of the baby faces, and then and empty the dressing rooms. Then we'd have a big wild thing at the end, and people up screaming and hollering and carrying on, and we'd leave. But I leave the baby face, that one, I'd leave them down. So then they get up and we'll challenge you here next week or whatever. It was just a local show anyway. But it kind of got over. And I had to, I taught myself by accident.
How many weeks in a row could you do that before the fans would cotton on and not enjoy it?
They never caught on. I did it there for 2 years.
all the good guys just win every match and just everyone was happy.
Well, no, on my TV shows, that's where I would do the angles. That's where I would really beat. That's where I'd screw the baby face on TV because they didn't pay any money to see the show. But once they come out of their houses and paid their money, well, let them leave happy. Give them what they're paid. They paid for. Pay them the entertainment. And anything I wanted to do big, I'd let everybody see it at one time. I'd do it on TV. Make sense?
Yeah. Did you do that in the IWA as well?
Oh, yeah. That's the, well, actually, I that's where I had the most success in IWA. Because nobody interfered with me there. See, with Carlos's company.
Did
I think I think one of the reasons when IWA did so well, because I was half drunk half the time, I went down there. I would think about the finishes of the matches. Eddie Gilbert was down there with me. And on Saturday afternoon,
well, that'd be in Carlos's thing, wouldn't it?
That would be, yeah.
Yeah.
And he would come in and he'd say, well, what are we doing tonight? I said, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. What? You hadn't thought about it? When are you going to start thinking about it? I said, oh, when I get over there to the show. So we get over there. Matches never start on time. We get there about 7 o'clock. It wouldn't start to 9:30. Hell, I had plenty of time to ponder it. And so I would go out there and I would go get me a couple of beers and I would watch the crowd come in before I even start thinking about it, get in the mood. Then I would go down there and I'd start doing the card. And see, that's when I would do my work. So, and I had a good time doing it. So we had a lot of sellouts there.
With just one more thing. Did you ever try and implement that in TNA?
Yeah, but they didn't understand it. They really didn't. Because, you know, when you got, Jeff had his own idea. Vince Russo had his own idea. So I just sit back and said, okay, let's do it. Take the path of least resistance.
Absolutely. On that note, we're going to take the path of least resistance and we are going to close down this podcast because people have started cutting on to the fact that I keep saying I'm hungry. But I am hungry. Because this is beyond 7 p.m. now and I'm getting hungry and I've got to make the dinner, which is going to be rump steak, which I still contend of all the cheaper steak cuts, it's the nicest.
And really?
Like, yeah, I really like rump steak. I don't like steak too thick, but I don't like those minute steaks that, you know, they cut, you know, like a sandwich steak.
Yeah, which I like thinking. Them.
I like a rump steak. They're the nicest. Anyway, for now, thank you very much for watching. If you want your question included in a future episode, email questions4dutch@gmail.com. But for now, we'll catch you on Friday for episode 99, where I shall be in Tokyo, Japan, and there will be 13 hours difference between us.
Are you going to send any brief updates from Japan?
We're going to do a podcast in Japan.
From Japan?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. What time's it? What's the difference?
What's the difference in time?
12 hours?
13 hours between East Coast America and Japan.
So if you do it at 10 o'clock in the morning for me, it'd be 10 o'clock at night for you?
It'd be 11 o'clock at night for me. So I think probably because
that's
you're
not
more
too bad.
You're more of a night owl than me. So we'll probably end up doing it where it's 9 a.m. for me or 8 p.m. for you.
No, that's good.
So yeah, you prefer doing it in the evenings anyway, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm okay matter. Either way.
Okay. So
I'm an adaptable bastard.
As proved, you were surviving in the wrestling business for so many years. But anyway, really, I should have mentioned this before we started recording these. But anyway, podcast. But yeah, so we're recording hopefully with Gail Kim soon for episode 100 yep. as well, which
and
we're looking forward to.
Maybe, possibly, Downtown Bruno. What was his name?
Harvey Whippleman.
Harvey Whippleman. He's got some stories. And I'll call him today.
No, you know the only barrier between him coming on is because he has a job and therefore I'd have to start recording at, what, 11 p.m.?
No, we can get him at night.
Can you?
No, I see us.
Yeah. So if it's like 6 p.m. for you, it's 11 p.m. for me.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll work it out. We will have Harvey on, I promise, or Downtown Bruno. Don't worry, we will do.
We'll get it.
Yeah. But so look forward to episode 100 with special guest Gail Kim as well. But for now, thank you very much for watching. Questions for
DrGmail.com. Ask the fans, or I can ask them, who would you like to hear?
Oh, I've already announced Gail Kim. So we've got we've got dozens of questions for her as well. So.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So I can.
Who else would they like to hear?
Vince McMahon.
I'd like to get him too.
Yeah.
It's a pound. That woman. I said, not too much. Not too much, Vince. Not too much.
Do you know, so, I never said this on the other podcast, but I meant to mention it. Every single time that it says Vince McMahon files a motion, it sounds like a euphemism for having a shit.
Files a motion.
Yeah.
It sounds like, to me, flushes the toilet.
It was like a bowel motion.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, on that note, thank you very much for watching. We'll catch you again on Friday. Dutch, we the people.
We the people. See you then.